Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Anyone who's recently visited the Brady District can't miss seeing the latest installation from 108 Contemporary. Oklahoma City artist Romy Owens assembled over 400 collaborators around the state to create a statewide knitting project, knitting over 100 miles of yarn into a 3,200 square feet installation, a quilt of sorts, covering the facade of the building. The unbearable absence of landscape was designed to unite communities of artists and craftspeople around the state and draw attention to the state's diminishing landscapes. The result is a pixelated landscape that encompasses the gallery and, when viewed from a distance, contrasts perfectly with Tulsa's real skyline. Because it's made out of acrylic yarn, the work is designed to be somewhat ephemeral, gradually changing as wind, water, snow and ice, and sun change the work over time. Although the installation has been up for several weeks, the official opening reception takes place this evening as a part of the First Friday Art Crawl in the Brady District. The reception takes place tonight from 6 to 9 and coincides with the gallery's artist members show, Cultivating Craft, inside the gallery. Romy Owen joins us today to talk about the project, which took most of this year to create, involving over 10,000 hours of labor. The unbearable absence of landscape will be on display outside of the 108 Contemporary Gallery through January 24th. Romy Owens, welcome back to Studio Tulsa, and congratulations on the unbearable absence of landscape.
Thank you.
Anybody who's been walking around the Brady District can't help but notice this huge installation along the front facade of 108 Contemporary. Take us back to the beginnings of this project. What was the idea originally?
You know, when I first started talking to Emily from 108, she was the director at the time, and the idea of making something that we knew would be very ambitious, and we knew we wanted to make a strong statement about the possibilities of crafting techniques within the fine art community. We knew it would be big, and in kind of brainstorming ideas and coming up with it, I thought, you know, I love the idea of an invisibility cloak for the building, like creating this landscape that just kind of imagines what the prairie landscape would be like if none of this was here. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I think that's good.
And so out of the beginning of that, the idea of sort of imagining that, you're talking about how much yarn. I mean, this thing is, how much does the thing weigh? I mean, this is from the top of the building down to practically the walkway.
Yeah.
And I always make a joke. I have a knitted sweater that I refer to as the 5-pound sweater, because it's so heavy. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the weight of this thing.
Okay, so in thinking about that from the beginning, there certainly were some very logistical things. I mean, we can come back to the conversation about the weight and the length and everything. First is who's making all of this? Because me alone as a knitter, as fast as I am, for me alone to have created all of the knitting required for this building would have taken me 4.5 years of nonstop, 40-hour week, 50 weeks a year. And that's assuming, of course, that my hands wouldn't have fallen off, you know. So the logistics of even incorporating so many hands and so many makers, then the logistics of how much yarn will it take. It's over 130 miles worth of yarn. We picked acrylic for a lot of very logistical reasons. One is that it's light and lofty in comparison with wool or cotton, which, I mean, just saturating that. It is. It's the 5-pound sweater, you know. Times 1,000. as an object that is dry, it's probably not even 600 pounds as a dry.
And of course, as you were putting it up, we had this incredible rainstorm that lasted for 4 days.
Well, thankfully, it was up before the rainstorm happened. However, water was a really important part of the installation process because you do want to size it to the building wet. So imagine if we had installed it dry from top to bottom and it was this perfectly like fitted thing. As soon as it did rain, half of it would have sagged and hit the ground. So water was a huge part of the installation process. Mm-hmm. And it did make it through that 4-day rainstorm, which is really great.
Yeah.
And that's the second major obstacle after wind. The third one will be ice.
Right, right. And this installation will likely see all three during its time up on the building.
So.
Yeah, that was a part of the process too?
It absolutely was. The idea that we knew that it would have to, of course, endure any weather changes. Of course, you know, we're windy. We're a windy state. You know, wind. That first day that it was up, we had 40-mile-an-hour sustained winds and it survived that beautifully. In fact, there's some amazing video footage of that, which is really great because it ripples on the building.
Right.
Oh, it's so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, getting back to the beginning of this process, you came up with this idea. It says, let's just put a knitted piece of artwork on the facade of the building.
Yes.
What was 108's reaction?
Emily was just like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. That'll be great. I mean, she was incredibly supportive and incredibly enthusiastic about it from the beginning. I fortunately have been sheltered from whatever maybe the board might have been thinking in terms of, oh, what are you going to do?
Right.
And we're really lucky to have Wallace Engineering in the Brady District say, we'll help you. We'll help you do that. We'll help you figure out the logistics of how this hangs and how it stays. And that was great.
So once you had that in place, you had to create this piece. You mentioned it would take you 4.5 years, mm-hmm. you know, 40 hours a week, every day of the year.
Yeah.
How did you reach out to various individuals or groups probably to help you create? Mm-hmm. What is it, over 6,000 tiles?
Yeah, it's a lot. I used Facebook pretty exclusively. I mean, as soon as we knew, okay, this is what's going to happen, and I knew landscape and I knew kind of the specs of what I wanted knitters to be making, I put it out on Facebook and said, hey, knitters, like, do you knit? Do you know a knitter? And word of mouth really is how we connected with what is at least 350 people across the state, in the region, across the country, internationally. Like, it was a word of mouth through social media.
So as you're creating this work, if the group of people working on it were that diffuse, you obviously had to have a full design made, worked out, color schemes.
Yep.
And so you're sending people, okay, go get acrylic color number, 47 or
kinda,
whatever.
Yeah.
So explain the process.
So it started with a call for knitters, and it was the same way in which within the art community it would be a call for artists. It was a call for knitters with a very specific set of expectations. Please use this kind of acrylic, super bulky acrylic yarn, and yarn is rated 1 through 6 from super light to super bulky. And so it was like, please use number 6, blue or green, cast on 25, make a square, use this size of needle. This is the kind of density we're looking for. And as much as comprehensive and as thorough as I was with that, I still got just an enormously wild array of tensions and some people casting on 25, but some people casting on 48. And
now you'll have to explain what those are.
It's all knitter techniques. Yeah. Like in crochet and in knitting, you use your needles or your hook to create like one knit, two knit, and so casting on is determines the width of your object.
So you had various densities.
Yeah, various densities. And people who really, like, what I love about this is on this side of it, I can look back and say the knitter community of Oklahoma is fiercely independent and maybe doesn't like to follow the rules so much. However, even with all the disparity and the differences between it, you still can make something really beautiful happen, and that's
right.
Great.
And of course, with it being on the outside of a building, the best place to view it is maybe a half a block to a block away.
It really is. It's really amazing. Like going across over to, I think
Guthrie
it's
Green.
Lucky's. Yeah, across Guthrie Green and going over to that kind of patio that's over there and looking at it is really where you've got the whole Tulsa skyline and the view. And it really, I mean, I'm amazed by it still. Like, I knew what it would look like because I've really projected kind of this idea of it, and I still look at it and go, wow, I can't believe that thing exists. Because
it came off better than your best expectations, you think, or about where you expect
it came off kind of where I expected. The only, it could have been a little bigger. That's
we're talking about the whole facade of 108 Contemporary.
Could have
been
from
the top to the bottom, and it could have been a little bigger.
It could have been a little bigger. But no, I mean, every projection that I made of it, it kind of hit the mark in all of those ways. I'm really...
Now, one of the cool effects of this is if 108 at night, if 108 Contemporary is lit on the inside, you get this wonderful, almost, I don't want to call it stained, it's a stained glass.
No, it is.
It's a stained glass effect.
It's the best comparison that we could even come up with. At night, the light coming from inside glowing out, I love that experience for people at night. And from the inside, during the daytime, like how the light comes through, it's really magical through those windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you sent out this call for knitters.
Yes.
Knitters are doing, you call them squares, but they almost look rectangular.
There are a lot of rectangles. Yeah. Well, because, okay, so yeah, please make these 8-inch squares was the goal. Like, I need X number of 8-inch squares.
Well, and you got scarves.
Yeah. At a certain point, pretty early on, I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, if they just keep making squares, that makes my seaming process longer than it needs to be. So then it became knit the whole skein into a rectangle, because that eliminates
right.
me having to join the square.
And I think it
square.
Actually looks better. Yeah. It does. I think if you'd done squares, it
would have become so
a little more pointillistic, maybe. Yeah,
maybe.
But I think it looks better mm-hmm. with the rectangles.
Well, it's certainly achieves.
You get this verticality sort of
That's
look.
True. You do. You get these really great long vertical lines, which is really nice for your eyes to take in. But it also achieves really what the point in a lot of this is, which is an amazing pixelization. Like, this is a kind of authentic rendering of how pixelization works in terms of stretches of bars of color. It wouldn't be perfect squares. And even if they had all presented me with squares, they all still would have stretched differently into different sizes of rectangles, because stretch was super important to this project.
Well, I would imagine it does stretch.
Oh, yeah.
Even an 8x8 is probably nowhere near 8x8 once
nope.
It's a part of the piece.
Yeah, you can get an 8-inch square optimally knitted to stretch to 16 inches if you want.
Yeah. So you started receiving all these pieces back,
mm-hmm.
and you very quickly realized, okay, it doesn't need to be squares. It needs to be rectangular.
Yep.
But you're the one that's stitching them all together.
Mm-hmm. And collecting them and storing them in my house for the better part of 6 months.
Yeah, how did you do that? I mean, because, yeah. I mean, we're talking the wall of a building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're taking, you could drape the house.
Yeah, it's a 3,200 square foot facade, and so it... My studio's in my living room, and so it certainly required moving out of that. I had a great patron in Oklahoma City who set me up in a space for 3 months where I literally had a 1,200 square foot empty box in which I set up tables and chairs and invited volunteers to come and help me seam together, which was an entirely other, massively labor-intensive process. It took... Oh my gosh, like I worked on seaming alone, I worked over 600 hours in a 8-week stretch of time.
Yeah. And this project goes back, I mean, you were announcing it, I think, when you were on the show last time, which I think was over a year ago.
Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah, no,
although I love the idea that might have been it. No, it does go back a good stretch of time. I started working on this, the conversation started in May of 2014.
Right, yeah.
So, but knitters didn't really start until January.
Right.
Which is...
Well, I think you spoke with us last fall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you were talking about how this was going to happen.
It could, yeah. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and so it...
Here it is.
Yeah.
Here it is. I think what's really crazy to me, and just even thinking about how every... Last year, whenever I would even describe it or talk about it or be thinking about it, how many people just couldn't even... I can't even conceive of what you're talking about. Like, you're going to put blankets on a building, and it's like, well, kind of, but not really. And yeah.
And what's really cool about you, of course, the piece is called The Unbearable Absence of Landscape.
Mm-hmm.
It is a landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really how the eye beholds it. Because you have these rectangles, I almost see a skyline at the bottom.
Oh, yeah, you absolutely. I mean, it absolutely
it was
does
supposed
that.
To be. It was supposed to be sort of the native land, but with the rectangles,
mm-hmm.
you actually see a skyline within the piece. And then when you're, of course, looking at it from the north,
mm-hmm.
you're seeing the imagined skyline and the real skyline.
Yeah, no, there absolutely is all sort. Like when you're manufacturing anything like that, it definitely, it hits all sorts of marks in terms of viewer experience, which is magical.
Wow. So you eventually came up with a series of sections that
mm-hmm.
you sort of have loosely stitched together, because mm-hmm. I would assume each one of those sections are pretty heavy.
They are. There are 15 independent panels that measure about 6.5 to 7 feet wide. And then in creating them, they were about 24 feet long. They stretch, of course, to fit the building at 36 feet. And each of those panels, one person, like, I can lift it. It's about as heavy as a really giant bag of dog food. Like, it's big. It's kind of like a hay bale. Like, it's hard to maneuver. I definitely built some muscle.
Right.
Moving them around a lot and rolling them and all of the things. But then each of those panels were independently installed and then zip tied together on the building, which is really something that I couldn't have, and I had a really hard time even picturing that. And I feel like I have a pretty creative imagination, but trying to picture it. But I like how it kind of works together, where it kind of feels like a perforated line and that kind of breaks the space up nicely.
Right. And the nice thing about it is, as you're looking up at it close, you're obviously looking at this wild melange of knitting. And then when you step back, it's like, you know, a great painting, you know, it's like it comes into view. The whole piece comes into view, and you have that sort of up close look of, well, this is really weird, because there's, you know, very tight knitting next to really loose knitting, and it has this sort of haphazard look. But when it comes back, when you step back, it really comes into full view.
It's really there are like over 6.5 million individual stitches in that. And so when you are looking at it up close, there is that intimacy of the hand at work, where you think people made this, machines didn't make this. Like, people literally sat and used their hands to create this entire monstrosity. But then when you do come back, you don't even notice the individuality of it. You notice the collectiveness, and that's really great. I love it.
My guest today is contemporary artist Romy Owens, who was the curator and assembler and artist behind The Unbearable Absence of Landscape, which is an installation at 108 Contemporary, over 6,000 knitted pieces that blanket the facade of the building. It's been up for a while, and people have already been commenting on it, but the opening reception officially is tonight from 6 to 9, which will coincide with 108 Contemporary's artist member show, Cultivating Craft, which is the members of the group. It's a curated show in which they're showing off some of their best pieces as well. So it's a great way to be inside and outside this evening to see this really remarkable installation. And you mentioned Wallace Engineering said, okay, we'll help you assemble it. Was the engineering on it particularly interesting and daunting in any way?
Yeah, it really was. So to hear them describe the technicalities of it, because I presented them with a roll of knitting and said, this is kind of where I'm thinking things will. They did all sorts of stretch tests and elasticity and trying to figure out how acrylic modules do something scientific that I couldn't even really begin to understand. They froze it, they stretched it, they did everything to see how intensely this could withstand all sorts of obstacles.
And of course the weight variation, because when it's dry, it's a fraction of the weight it would be if it were saturated.
Exactly. And so they, I think that their estimation is that they really had to design some kind of counterweight at the roof of the building that would withstand the weight of several cars being suspended, which is like, oh yeah, I didn't really think about cars. And you think about, you know, that's a couple few tons.
Oh, just a couple of VW bugs.
Whatever. Exactly. So the entire, and you can actually even see the orangeness of it from a distance. You can see this glowing orange thing on top of the building, and that's a giant system of water bladders that they and Manhattan Construction worked on installing on the top of the building. Everything is fastened to that so that no matter what happens, there's enough weight to hold it on.
Yeah, and the bladders sort of take the weight off the actual facade of the building itself.
Yeah. Being a historic building, they wanted, of course, to do everything they could to maintain any kind of integrity for the building, and public safety being of utmost importance. You know, you've got to do whatever you can to keep it on the building.
Yeah. So you began putting it up on the building, and people started immediately commenting. Yeah. And, of course, as we mentioned, within a day of getting it up, you had these huge winds coming through downtown. It was, you know, not an incredible wind, but we had that big storm coming our way, so we had a lot of wind. Mm-hmm. How did the piece react?
It really was beautiful to see, because you've got these kind, like, you know, it's almost feels like a sail.
Well, you have this pixelization, and I would think if you get a shimmering pixelization, it's kind of like watching cable when it's going.
Yeah. Well, it is. My computer was glitching out. My video card on my computer was glitching out for a long time, and all of a sudden things would just become these like random dancing pixels on my screen, and that kind of was as interesting as the program I might have been watching. and it kind of is like that. Like, oh yeah, look at what it's doing. The nice thing I feel for me as an artist, and I hope that all of the people who helped in making this and 108 can appreciate in thinking about outdoor ephemeral experiences, is that there's a lot of shift and change that can and will happen over the course of it. So watching it even in those first days and seeing it dance on the building, it's like there's a part of you that is terrified that it's going to do damage, like in any number of unpredictable ways. But then there's also this wow, I can't believe that we all kind of get to witness this. And it was really cool.
So after the win came the rain. Mm-hmm. Were you concerned at all about?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What were your thoughts? As you know, we're talking about 8 inches of rain, you know, going into the weekend. I don't think we got quite that much, but it got a thorough soaking. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, and from a distance, I'm in Oklahoma City, where our rain turned into
ice.
A tremendous ice storm that took out parts of my oak tree. I mean, like, oh, I'm thinking, what? But it survived beautifully. There's a little sag to it that happened, but we all knew that would happen. We knew that it would be shifting downwards the entire time. Fortunately, I have enough experience with knitting installations to know no matter where you put it, I mean, it's like hanging up a sweater. It's just over time, it's just going to drag longer and longer. And that's exactly what happened. So it did great.
Are you hoping that we'll have some ice and snow during this insulation just to see what the piece does?
Well, to see what the piece does, because I certainly, you know, it's hard not for the future Romy is thinking about, like, oh, well, let's see what we can do next and how it will survive under any kind of condition. More than that, though, I want to see the photographs of the snow. I mean, I want to see that.
Now, is that something you're doing? You're documenting this piece? Because, I mean, it is ephemeral in its own way. Mm-hmm. It's not going to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least might be stored in somebody's, in a storage building.
Technically, as a plastic object, it could last forever. It will. Isn't that amazing? The whole thing's made of plastic. Like, every part of that is plastic. And beautiful. A beautiful plastic object that will last forever. Documentation is important, and I'm doing what I can to document it, and thankfully I have the advocacy of the entire Tulsa community working on documenting, you know, in their own experience. Like, everybody who goes and takes a photo of themselves in front of this giant installation, like, they're documenting it too, which is beautiful. I love that.
Well, it's certainly a great addition to the Brady District right now, where it's just this, you know, especially in the evening when the light's coming out of the building, it just has this great glow to it, and it looks spectacular.
Thank you.
And I assume this is going to stay up through early January.
Actually, the goal is January 24th.
Okay.
And, I mean, if it still looks amazing, it could stay up longer. Mm-hmm. If it poses any kind of problem, public safety risk or risk to the building in any way, it will need to come down sooner. And that is the nature of ephemera.
And you built that into the idea of this project, that it was going to deteriorate in some way, or, you know, as you mentioned, it is plastic. It will survive, but it's going to change.
Yes. Well,
and that was part of the art of the piece,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it really, the whole thing is about our diminishing experience with the landscape. So here's a landscape that's not going to last forever. Like, we can only experience for a limited period of time before it's going to disappear. And that is not untrue for our own experience within the world right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've driven the state so many times in the past year, just going to knitting circles in different communities. And there are places that I documented at the beginning of this cycle that in driving back through, they're already changed because of wind farms or because of, like, there's a scenic turnoff where it literally was this beautiful hillside with very little interruption of man-made objects. And the last time I drove it, there are 60 wind farms. Like, there's a whole, and those are beautiful too. But I mean, what we know is the landscape is it's just going to continue to disappear.
Now, you mentioned the knitting circles you were visiting. I assume you're visiting little small towns, little senior community centers, or give us a sense of who helped you put this together.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to say, there were a lot of knitting circles that really supported and embraced this project, even without being able to fully comprehend the scope of what they were doing. They believed in the art of it. They believed in supporting it and the statewide community aspect of it. Even though it took them away from maybe their own personal projects or their group's pet project, which might have been like the Purple Cap project or there are a lot of people who knit blankets for vets. I mean, there's so many very significant knitting projects that are out there that a lot of these women and men were willing to set aside for a moment just to make a few squares, which I'm so grateful for. The demographic certainly is a 60-plus demographic. There are a fair share of people who are under 60, but, you know, you think about who is capable of making something of this scale, and you think, oh, yeah, the demographic of hands on this project, it's certainly a senior.
So are they coming together at community centers or stuff like that, or are they doing it on their own? Or?
There are some people who knit it on their own. There are some existing knitting groups that I would go, like I drove to Ada and Woodward and Lawton, and literally joined a group that was already in existence and got to know those women and got to have conversations with them. And they always had questions about how's it coming. And, you know, there's a sense of unity and camaraderie that comes through working, knowing that you're working in tandem with Stillwater and Ponca City and everybody's coming together. But then we also, here in Tulsa and in Oklahoma City and in Stillwater specifically, started groups that were exclusively designed to work towards this project. And those groups would meet on a regular, ongoing basis.
Now, have you had, I know you've had a knitter's reception for mm-hmm. them already. What was the reaction, especially from some of these small towns where they're going, okay, I'm just going to knit this. I mm-hmm. don't know what you're doing or whatever, but I'm going to do this. What was the reaction for people like that?
You know, I really feel like almost every single person who I've talked to that made for this project is just blown away and so thrilled that it came together.
I can imagine. You do a skein of yarn. Mm-hmm. whatever color mm-hmm. you told them to do, and you know, you send it off, and all of a sudden it's this huge
yeah.
artwork.
It's what's most funny to me at this point is I'm thrilled that they're pleased with it, because that could have gone, it really could have gone terribly wrong, where it would be an embarrassment to say, yeah, I helped with that, you know. But everyone has such a sense of pride because it is such an overwhelming and a really empowering experience. Like, look at what 350 people worked on making for a year and how magical it is for everybody to experience. But in hindsight, I know that there are a lot of the knitters who came and some who can really clearly identify their square on the wall. Look, that's mine. I made that. And, they, you know, that glow that comes from them from seeing their thing. And then the other people who said, oh, I wish that I'd made mine more recognizable so that I could pick it out. I'm grateful for all of it, because that texture just adds to the conversation about how many individuals came together to make.
Now, you do a lot of collaborative art, and you do a lot, but was this by far the biggest project you've done?
by far, this has been, the biggest thing I've ever been a part of, the most time-intensive and emotionally intensive project I've ever been a part of. Through this whole thing, like, I've had conversations that have had me in stitches where I could hardly keep it together from laughter, and then times when I have literally cried because the conversation was so significant and moving. It definitely is the biggest thing to date. But I would say, you know, like, this did not shy me away from the idea that I could do something
again. So that was my next question. Has this sated your appetite for collaborative art, or whetted it?
I think it has whetted it. I mean, the power of collaboration is really, it's significant and profound. And the way it pulls people together and creates community, shared experiences like that, it's really hard not to want to endorse, support, promote, foster in any way. And I want to continue to do that.
Well, all of us can share in this mm-hmm. project by visiting 108 Contemporary. The opening reception is tonight for part of First Friday in the mm-hmm. Brady District. Opening reception from 6 to 9 for The Unbearable Absence of Landscape. Romy Owens, thanks very much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you so much. It's just been a pleasure to be here and talk about it. Thank you.
Contemporary artist Romy Owens speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa, who assembled over 400 knitting collaborators to create the installation The Unbearable Absence of Landscape, on display outside of 108 Contemporary through January 24th. An opening reception for the installation, as well as the Contemporary's artist member show, Cultivating Craft, takes place from 6 to 9 this evening in the Brady District for the Art Crawl. Information at 108contemporary.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.